Welcome to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast, your home for insights and insider knowledge about hypnotic change work. With your hosts, control practitioners and hypnotists, Nicole Mazzucato and Anthony Gitch.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Hypnotic Healers. I'm Nicole Mazzucato, and as always, I'm here with my friend and co-host Anthony Gitch all the way over there. Before we get started, our usual disclaimer, neither Anthony nor I nor our guest today are licensed medical professional psychologists or psychiatrists, so please do not make any changes or alterations to any medications or treatments you're on based on the conversation you hear here today. Take what you like and leave the rest, and while you're leaving stuff, you can leave us a like, a love, a heart, a thumbs up, whatever you like. Share us around, drop us a message, get in touch, and over to you, Anthony. Hello.
And hello to you too, Nicole. It's always so wonderful to see you. And I know this time of year, it's probably nice and holiday seasonous over there in Spain, where it's probably nice and warm instead of all cold over here in the Pacific Northwest and dreary and cold up in the UK as well. But anyway, it's nice to see you just a week before the holidays. And who do we have with us today, dear?
Yeah, no, I'm really excited because this is the first time she and I have actually seen each other face to face, even though we've communicated and we're in the same group in Facebook, and we've communicated via text and whatnot. So I'm really pleased to introduce Laura Cox, who is a comedian and a hypnotist. I'm not sure in what order. I think the comedian came first. So welcome to the show, Laura.
Hello. And thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for coming.
And from my neck of the woods, yeah.
Yeah, no, we're only like 5 miles away. We actually came very close to seeing each other on one of the comedy clubs that lived near you, Jest Comedy Club, but we didn't quite make it.
I didn't quite make it, unfortunately.
I was actually glad at the time. I was thinking, shit, please don't come. It's going to be a really shit night. It's a free comedy night, and I didn't really want you to come when you said, I'm coming, but I can't keep telling people not to come and see me. But actually, it was a really good night, and then I was like, I want to come. You should have come.
Yeah.
I was so funny.
Next time. Yeah.
So do you bring hypnosis into your comedy, or so it sounds as if you're a comedian first and a hypnotist second?
Well, I think it depends how I'm feeling and who I'm talking to and what I'm doing. So like, it's quite hard to play because actually, like, for instance, I'm doing a protocol tomorrow night called The Albatross, which is an incredibly serious, very, very serious protocol. It's all about trauma and release. And it was a protocol that came as a result of teaching. So, yeah, stand-up comedy came first. That is my first love. Then it was teaching. And teaching really came as a result of sort of like thinking I can't carry on with the stand-up in many, many respects. And then the actual protocol I'm sharing tomorrow is a result of a lot of trauma. There's a lot of it to do with performance and teaching. So it's quite serious. And I was thinking, can I be funny with it? You know, hopefully, but I don't know. But, you know, like, it also depends on who's going to be there and what people's expectations are. And so it's quite a balance, isn't it, between not alienating people that want therapy and help. And, you know, you want people to believe in you and that you can help them. And also being myself and also, you know, being relaxed enough to be funny. Because I forgot what I was going to say. I can't remember. It was about comedy. But obviously now I am doing stand-up. It is definitely emerging. So I've got I think it's funny. Funny routine about taking my vagina into therapy and running parts on it. And so it's a definite integration. But I think it'd be ideal for an actual hypnotherapy audience. But so far, obviously, there's not many hypnotists in an audience crowd. So I'm only newly back into comedy. So I did stand up for about 7 years, and then I went into teaching for 16 years. So for a long time, it's very hard for me to feel like you introduced me as a comedian. And I'm thinking, am I? Because it's only I was, and then I'm not, and then I am again. So yeah. So
what kind of teaching did you get into?
Secondary school, so like drama and English.
Okay. Right,
that's so cool.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that didn't
well there's so definitely cool. A lot of comedian work that needs to be done with that kind of a job. Certainly the kind of attitude that it takes to do that kind of work, particularly for that long of a time.
Absolutely. To be honest, like, I remember when I first started doing teaching, because I come from a background in comedy, like, teachers were like, yeah, you're gonna walk this. Because you've done stand-up, it's going to be easy. Oh, my God, it was so not true. Teaching was way harder than stand-up comedy. Startup means that people are paid to see you be funny. Those kids don't want to be there. It's completely, yeah. You can say whatever they want to you, and you can say nothing. You can't say, oh, I can't swear, can I?
You can say whatever you want on this show. This is no.
You can't say, you fuck off, you little wankers. You can't say that because you get sacked.
You used to be able to say that. I remember that's kind of what they told us when we were kids. We got swatted still.
Yeah, you've got to hit kids and tell them they were useless. I don't know what's happened. What's wrong with our world?
Yes, they wanted to do this softer, more smooth world, and it's just turned into a shit show.
It really has. It's funny because some of it's great, but that's why I was finding it really interesting when I read one of your posts, Nicole, because you're talking about these kids that know the word narcissist, and I'm shocked because you've got these kids like 11 or 12 talking about toxic relationships. And what the fuck? Why are you talking about toxic relationships at 11 or 12 years old? I mean, And I was thinking there's a lot about narcissism at the moment, isn't it? Everyone has gone out with a narcissist. And it's possibly true, because obviously there is. But at the same time, I think all those love songs that, you know, that you hear, but how many of them are actually just basically love songs about narcissists, you know, like people that are up and down and, you know, that they can't make someone out or they're being their lives shit. Maybe it's just a narcissistic relationship.
I think the kids these days are exposed to too much too early, and they don't know what the hell they're talking about and need to keep their little mouth shut like we had to.
Yeah, I don't know. But then you think some of this is so serious what they're hearing about, isn't it? And then so they get these labels for really quite serious stuff. Some of it is obviously going to be true, but then other parts of it is they're exposed to this horrible, like saying toxic relationships and narcissistic relationships. These are very real things, but I don't really want them to know about that before they experience or just fancy someone and then be rejected and have another label for it.
But didn't we all, I mean, don't kids all go through basically the same thing at each generation? We weren't as exposed to the terminology, I think. But I don't think we were as
exposed to as much as they are by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, no, because we didn't have the internet.
No.
We didn't have all that internet. Media.
So, you know, kids were born with phones in their hands, and the internet is a dark place.
You are correct.
It's true. You must go back over your life and just look at things now, having no new terminology for them. My sounds now is deafening my ears. Is it all right for you?
You're good. You're fine. You're fine at our end.
Yeah, but yeah, so I think with all the terminology, it is all really interesting, isn't it? When you look back and you can articulate, and it is great because obviously you can recover and heal from things so much more easily when you have a label for them or when you think, that's what that is. But at the same token, is the problem is it's also introducing stuff to people that before that perhaps you'd want them to kind of experience something first before the labels. And I think also, we could go on about this, but children find themselves too early, in my opinion, with labels, even though they might have those things. For me, you know, and I think if I go back, I probably do have ADHD or did have ADHD, or I don't know, but I feel like if I had been given that label when I was a kid, would it have helped me? I don't think it would have done.
Well, you know, and I hadn't, you know, it, you know, I talk about, we were just kind of told to be quiet. And you know what, we didn't have the internet, though. We didn't have all of this exposure to just so much input all of the time. And so it is, you know, it is a very different time. And these kids are exposed to things that they're exposed to things that I haven't been exposed to yet because they know how to do better searches than I do.
But not wanting to take the conversation in a dark route, but there is some really nasty shit going on the internet, you know, the kind of dark side of Instagram and kids that are opening up sort of accounts and being, you know, being, what's the word, sort of bombarded with pictures and phone calls and things from older people and whatnot. I mean,
creepy.
It's really creepy and it's really nasty. And there's a lot of really nasty people that do some really nasty shit from behind a screen.
See, I just don't think about that because it's just, for one, I don't have a kid and you know, I just don't think about that stuff. So it's just, you know, that's got to be tough as a parent, you know.
I don't think you would unless you're either working with young people or have kids. And I think why would you necessarily think about that kind of stuff.
Well, all the commercials they have on TV here, it's constantly in your face about protecting teens from online content. And I've oftentimes, you know, I really haven't had a conversation with anybody about it until now. And so, you know, yeah, this does kind of open my eyes a bit. I hadn't considered that, you know, because there's a lot of child exploitation that can happen.
Yep. So moving swiftly on from that, Lara, how did you get from comedian, secondary school teacher, hypnosis?
Okay. Oh, it's very hard to keep this light with these questions. comedy. So I've been doing it for quite a while, and I was living in very difficult circumstances. Money wasn't, you know, so I was running a gig, but also like to do okay, you have to do a lot of traveling. So there's a lot of driving, like you'll go to Manchester, and for what I was, the place that I was at, be like 70 quid drive to Manchester or something like that. Or, you know, so at the point I was thinking, right, am I going to make this significantly enough? And by making it, I mean like good money, you know, being recognised and doing well enough and playing all the best clubs. And actually, and the other thing was, and I feel really bad for saying this, but I looked at more my relationships were difficult while I was doing comedy. They don't really lend themselves to, you know, for good relationships. All my female friends, you know, I looked at them and like the older people. So I was in my 20s when I was doing stand-up, and all my female friends just like, were all like the older ones, just like bitter and angry. And I feel slightly worried about saying this because I'm saying this in a public place, but I just thought, am I going to be happy? Am I going to be, able to have a decent relationship with someone? Am I going to be able to have any stability financially? And to top that off, I also struggle with performance anxiety all the time. Like one day, you know, like one beat I would be really good, the next I'd be shit. I still have that. My performance, you know, obviously hypnosis works brilliantly for that. But like my when I had a really good gig or a really good break, or like a, you know, someone I really wanted to impress watching me, you know, like a give it like, or even as I was picked to do an Avalon competition early on, and the Comedy Store Hooch Awards, I was picked out because, you know, I was always, my writing was always recognised. You could always tell that I was a really good writer. And so I was often made it to, like, selected at a very early sort of like level for performance. And on those big ones, I'd often, you know, like, sabotage them. So at Comedy Store, I still remember dying horrifically. And I'd done the Comedy Store Hooch Award. And on the bill was Catherine Tate. Who did her first? She did her first. So we both had open mics together. I died, I bombed, and she did her brilliant. It was the first time she ever did her old woman. You know, like oh fuck off! I can't remember how she does it. You know, like that woman that she's become really famous for. So that was one of her first sort of like times doing that. And so that was the beginning of our careers going separate directions. It wasn't obviously the only time I died, but that was quite a significant death because the Comedy Store, I'd already been, like, Don Ward was running this place at the time and liked me and thought it was really good. And then I was given these chances, you know, a couple of, like, one tour with the Comedy Store, which went okay. And then this one, which I bombed at the worst possible time. But that's just kind of typical of, I quite often bomb where, when it mattered to me. But obviously, and this is the great thing about hypnosis, and I always said when I first started doing hypnosis, had I known I went to go and see a hypnotherapist when I was doing stand-up just once, and it was not a great experience. I didn't know she wasn't a good hypnotherapist for me at the time. I just thought, oh, this is shit, this isn't doing anything. But there was no rapport, she didn't make any effort to talk to me. It just, and I just walked away thinking, yeah, that was a bit crap. I never really thought about hypnosis again.
So what did they do? Just take you into a room, put some earplugs or put some earphones on you, let you listen to something and send you away?
It was in Crouch End. I don't remember. No, it wasn't. It was in an office in Crouch End. I think someone had gone to see her for phobia. I thought, well, hang on, my confidence is always up and down. I could really do with feeling less uptight before I perform. So I went to see her. I don't remember any conversation, just lying down on a bed. And that's what I remember. There was, she didn't speak to me. Now, you could talk about all the content-free stuff, but I feel like it would have been, for me personally, I like a chat. I like a bit of rapport. But that's my, you know, I know some people, sometimes you don't want to talk about the trauma. You don't want to have to necessarily talk about some of the things that have happened to you. But I do want to feel like, well, anyway, I didn't have this kind of, these reference points. Anyway, all I know is I went in and I found the woman to be quite clinical. It was quite a professional setting, and I didn't feel anything, any connection or engagement with her, and that was it. You know, not that, you know, that even if I'd had a great session, who knows, maybe if I'd met myself, I would have, you know, I would never have gone to teaching. Not that I regret that now, but I do regret teaching for as long as I do, but I don't regret the part that made me do hypnosis, because I really love where I'm at right now. I love doing hypnotherapy. I don't want to not do hypnosis. I absolutely love it as much as I love doing stand-up. But actually doing hypnosis has given me another context for comedy, which I love even more, because I love where it can take comedy. Because for me as a comedian, I was always about human condition. Really, I was always about connecting with people and healing. That was always, what have we got in common? What has this group of people got in common? How can we connect and how can we heal? That was always, my favourite comedians were always basically human condition people, you know, but I don't go into that one just yet. But anyway, so I forgot what I was saying. But yeah, so hypnosis, discovering hypnosis now has obviously made me, enabled me to perform better, because I still had, even at school, I suffered from performance anxiety as a drama teacher. You know, that was the thing that, you know, probably, you know, that and stress, you know, caused years of like struggle. And but then discovering hypnosis and how you can change your mindset, had I had that in my 20s, it might have been a very different, I would have played it very differently rather than being so open to, you know, like having a bad day or having, you know, yeah, bad experience, but then it goes feed into my, you know, my performances.
I've seen you do some amazing. I mean, we're in the same group. I know you've done the training with Freddie and Anthony. I don't know how long you've been doing hypnosis for, but you know, the time that I've seen you in that group, you've just been all over the place doing all sorts of things and going straight out there and doing demos in the streets. And you've gone and done, you've gone to like health and well-being shows and had a stand and been doing hypnosis in public with people. So from the outside, looking into the posts that you're sharing, it just looks like you're so, you know, so confident, and you just go and put yourself out there and do, and it's amazing to see.
Yeah, that's great that you feel that way. I mean, I suppose it's true, because I do stuff, and I also think I don't do stuff fearlessly, but I do stuff with fear. And I think that's one of the things you do get from stand-up comedy. I mean, I remember I was really, really shy, not like from teenage, but from primary school. I was painfully shy, and it was absolutely hurt me to communicate outside of the house. But I was always funny, like at home, and I always thought funny. I always think funny, always see lots of things going on, but it took me a long time. And the desperation of sort of like of being misunderstood, I think, was the thing that made me think, right, that's it, fuck it, I am going to communicate. And then I feel like my life path has been about communication, being understood, and connecting, really. Attention a bit, I do like it, I think I like attention, but I don't think it's as much as it's supposed to be. And I think that's why I stopped doing stand-ups. I don't think I have the need for attention as much as some people. I think it's an important drive. The really, really amazing comedians, there is that need for attention. But in terms of doing loads of stuff, I think I've been with the JHA for maybe, I think it's at least a year, but it's definitely been the thing that's been, I think it was the impromptu stuff for me is the bridge between the two worlds. And I knew I was sort of looking for that, because it's a bridge between the hypnosis and the comedy, and it's the kind of the common ground where you get to communicate and collaborate with people and then bring in the therapy. And I mean, it's really early days for me, and like, I feel like I'm right back at the beginning of finding that niche between comedy and hypnosis. But it's exciting, but it's also like, I'm looking, thinking, oh my God, how long is this going to take? I'm 50. I haven't got time. Like when I go back to like when I was in my 20s, you know, there's the gigs you have to wait and wait. There's so few gigs now as well. And you just need the stage time. And I've got, so maybe I am everywhere. Because you're right, I have time feels limited because I feel like, I don't know how long, and if I'm not even 50, I'm not planning on dying in the next 5 years, but you don't know, do you? It's like, that's what I feel. I feel like, I've got two best friends that died. One of my best friends died at 31, and I'm not going to guess that's going to be a downer, but, you know, you just don't know, do you, how long you've got? And I feel like it's taken me all this time to get to the place that I found the things, you know, because I've always known I'm a writer. I've always known that I'm funny, really. When you not all the time, not to everyone, but you know, for those people that are listening, I am funny. And now I've found hypnosis, which is just like the most amazing thing that I've ever found. I just wish I'd found it earlier.
But you know what? We're always exactly where we're supposed to be when we're there. So
yeah.
And that
performance background, you know, both the comedian and the teaching, because at the end of the day, being a teacher, you're a performer, you're standing up in front of groups of people and the harshest audience ever every day, totally. Right? I always remember the first day of term with new groups was always like the most sort of like, oh God, who are they? Who are they going to be? What are they going to be like?
It's hard.
But that kind of performance background that you've had and sort of, you know, you tapping into the impromptu piece to put yourself out there, to build your business, to connect with people as a bridge into also the therapy side of things is the piece that so many hypnotherapists are missing, right? Yeah. The piece that so many hypnotherapists are like, oh, I wish I could do that. I wish I had the confidence to you know, do the impromptu stuff, to stop and do demos with people in the streets and stuff like that. So you've got this amazing gift that so many people are missing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I don't understand it because I think it's really quite easy. I know, I really do. I think people are scared of it. Why are you scared of it? It's like, it doesn't feel nice. It doesn't feel nice when it doesn't work, but neither does hypnosis. Hypnotherapy doesn't feel nice when you wake up and say, you know, or have you stopped smoking? Oh, yeah, I've had a fun. Oh, shit, fuck. Oh. But it doesn't feel great. But what are you going to do? You're going to not do it again? You're going to do it again. You're going to get better. And you're going to think, well, what did I do? And you get better, don't you? The odds get better and you have more and more, you know. And I think ultimately with the impromptu, I don't know why. I think people are just scared of failure, aren't they? And although I am scared, but not enough to make me stop. I think that's what it is. I can just see the value of it more than, you know, yeah, so I'm prepared. Same way as when you're shy.
There's living within that 3%, right? They say that 3% outside of your comfort zone is the place that you want to stay, because 5% is usually too much to where you're not going to do it. It's going to challenge you just enough that you won't take that step. But and 2% isn't enough that interests you, but usually that 3.5% enough to take you where you're on the edge, where you're uncomfortable, but you're not afraid. And that's the place where you learn the most oftentimes is right there on that cusp.
It sounds great. I'm just wondering how you'd think in terms of data, how I'd know how you judge 2 or 3%.
How do you calculate the 3%?
Well, I mean, because, you know, when you just described it. Right. It's that stepping outside of your comfort zone enough where you are nervous and uncomfortable, but not afraid, not so afraid that you're not going to do it. Right. That's tipping point.
It's not going to destroy you. Okay. Yeah. It's not going to stop you doing it ever again, which some things can do. If you know that's a step too far, if I do that now, it might stop me from doing it in the future. Then it's too much, which is a good point.
Something like that.
Chani Ha Ha. So it's really interesting because I don't feel like I am fearless, but she is someone who is fearless. Now, Susanna's like, so when she came to see me, it was my first comedy gig back doing stand up, and she came and I was doing a gig there, but she was busy before we were going on. She was just going around all the tables, just like doing the impromptu stuff. And I thought, oh, there's nothing I would want to do less right now than that. So, I mean, I have to, and I feel like that with a lot of things. I have to be in the mood. I have to be in the right performance space. Also, you know, this is, Chan won't care. She will, like, I will read a room and try and pick someone I think might go for it. She doesn't bother. Now, whether that's a strength or a weakness, I don't know.
She'll just go up to anyone and everyone.
She'll go up to anyone. She's got a massive, massive failure rate. She doesn't give a shit. But I do give a shit. I don't like failing. I really don't enjoy it. So I will try and avoid it. But I am, you know, it's not going to stop me doing something. But going on the streets, I definitely don't like the approach. I definitely feel, you know, it's all right once the connection's there, but that initial, are they going to just discard me? Are they going to just, like, am I going to get that moment where recognition, where I think they're thinking, leave me alone, oh, you're strange, fuck off, anything like that, that moment where you know that they don't want to talk to you, I don't relish that at all. But it is really, really good fun. And I think that's what it is. It's what, you know, that when you do it, and when you have the connection and they have a good time, it's just brilliant. It's just really good fun.
Yeah. No, I think there was a, I think, so a lot of people are attracted to the Jacquin Hypnosis Academy because the combination of Freddie and Anthony, and they both have their unique approach and their unique backgrounds. And Anthony very much comes from the stage, you know, the kind of hypnosis for entertainment and stage. And he's obviously got quite a cult following in that sense. And I know there was a
performer, isn't he, as well? He's just,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And both very much sort of push you to go out there and do, you know, be the hypnotist and approach people and do the impromptu stuff. And I know that I didn't manage to go, but there was a meetup in Glasgow, I think. They did a meetup in Glasgow. And I remember seeing videos. Yeah. I don't know if you were there with Chani, and she was going out into the streets of Glasgow and just grabbing hold of anyone and everyone.
Right, that was me and Chani, and Anthony was basically started us off that night. And it was, for me, that was the best part of that weekend, because it wouldn't have happened. In fact, I wasn't really planning. I was planning on going to see some stand-up, which I never went to see, because I thought, oh, I'll go to Glasgow, I'll see some stand-up comedy while I'm there. Chani, we had decided we were going to do some street impromptu before, so we took, I think I had my T-shirt, it says hypnotist on it, and we went out, and so Anthony, we started, I can't remember, but in the evening, I had a couple of drinks, we went out. He approached a few people when we were with him, and then that was it. And we kind of, like, I mean, I've learned Anthony's stuff anyway, so I went through all his stuff on the GHA website, on the platform that he, and learned, what's the word you heard when, you know, the stock word, you know, that you get at the market trade, what is it called again? His banter, his patter. Yeah, so even now I've still got certain of his lines that I just now are too ingrained that you know, that I can still hear that his exact patter from the scripts, or not from his scripts, but from his, you know, from that course that's on GHA. But yeah, we went out, we had a laugh, we had some drinks. It was brilliant. That was really kind of like a really important weekend for me.
Strength in numbers, right? I think, you know, I think that's what I get from seeing you two go out there together, because you've done loads of stuff together, and you know, you've gone out as a duo, and I think that does, in a sense, you know, could potentially give you more confidence and more kind of self-assurance. And we're doing this together, we're approaching people together. If one of us or both of us, you know, they don't want to play, we can carry it. I think it feels less exposing than going out and doing it on your own.
You have a laugh anyway. And you're guaranteed to have a laugh. And I love doing stuff with Chan, because she's quite, I mean, I should be careful. No, but she's quite nuts. And she does things that I wouldn't do, and she's much, I'm actually a lot more reserved than people think, or than you might think, but I am actually very, very, I am actually careful. You know, it might not come across that way, but I am, and I calculate what I do, whereas she does not, and I like that, because it makes me feel freer.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Laura, as we start to wrap up then, we've got one final question for you that we like to ask all of our guests, is a learning curve, basically something in your business or with a client or something like that, that you kind of did or that happened, whatever. And you were like, yeah, no, I wouldn't do that again like that. And this is what I learned.
Yeah. So I think the fact that my heart still sinks. So right, whenever I, so I have a stalker. And it's not the kind of, well, not that you'd want any kind of stalker, but it's the worst kind of stalker. I've got a stalker who goes around saying, don't trust this woman. She's a con artist. Don't, whatever post that I do, you know, smoking, she said, don't go with this woman. She says it's free the second session. She just makes up lies. She says it's the second session's free. It's not. She'll charge you £350 and it's still. And it all comes from the fact that I went and I did a party for her. I did a stage hypnosis party. So it was a year ago. So yes, I've been at JHJ for just over a year, and in October last year, I went to JHJ specifically or particularly. There was lots of things, you know. Both Fred, I've seen Freddie do a 24-hour event, and just a really lovely human being, and then obviously new. Ant had done the impromptu stuff, but so I came thinking, yeah, I'd like some, you know, like one, not like, like the in-person stuff. I really wanted that kind of training. I really wanted the impromptu stuff. So before I'd actually done any of it, I got asked, would you do a party? You know, someone has seen some of my social media and obviously come across as someone who's up for a party, which is true, and said, will you come and do a stage hypnosis private party? And every part of me said, well, no, you shouldn't do this because you haven't done any of this before. But then I thought, well, hang on, this is what I want to do. So what am I waiting for? If I'm here because I want to do that, someone's saying, can you do this? And I know where to go to learn it. Why would I not say yes? So I said yes, but there was only 2 weeks to go. It might have actually been a week. There wasn't long until when I was asked to do this party. So I agreed to do it. This lady asked me all the stuff that she wanted me to do. She kept talking about, was it Paul McKenna? Was he the other big hypnotist?
Yeah, Paul McKenna.
Yeah, but there's another one as well. I'm trying to think, I don't know if it was, I think it might be Paul McKenna. Anyway, she's told me what she wanted, like the tricks that she wanted. One of the things that she wanted me to do was to plant a conspiracy theory in someone else's, one of her guests' minds, which I didn't really think too much. I didn't think it sounded great, but I thought, you know, I'll see how that goes, let alone whether I could do it or not. I just thought, I'm not really sure on the ethics of that, but we'll see. But she wanted, you know, but the other thing is so I was going to go to a house. It's going to be 2 hours. So I learned all the impromptu stuff that was available, like all Anthony's stuff, basically, and all of that. I thought, okay, I've got a plan. I've got a party. It's going to be fine. Got there. There was, like I did say, there needs to be a certain amount of guests. She said, yeah, it's going to be, you know, there's going to be loads of people. She told me that they were getting back at a certain time. Anyway, they arrived much later than they said. There was no party. There was about 10 people. It might have even been 8 or 9 people. There was no music. There was no atmosphere. So this is like a really, really not my idea of what a party is. But anyway, began doing the, you know, like the normal sort of like stuff to try and ascertain who's going to go for it, like the magic fingers, the magic hands, just working out who I had out of those. Oh, and they hadn't been told I was coming, is the other thing. Some of them weren't very comfortable with it. As soon as I got there, I realised, oh, yeah, the woman, I did also ask, I said, I do, on the internet, I remember saying, I swear, is that okay? Yeah, no problem. And, yeah, so when I got there, it was clear that the people didn't know I was coming. There was, and out of those people, she also didn't want to be involved, the person that's organising, the person that asked me to do all these things. Anyway, so out of those 8 people or 9 people or however many that they basically got, I had 2 people that were actually going along with it. So I had two people, one of them whose birthday it was, and they were really, really nice, really nervous guy. This is a guy she wanted me to do a conspiracy theory on. And when I met him, I thought, this is a really nervous, anxious man. He was clearly, you know, it was really nice. It was going with it, but I really don't want to do what she's asked me to do. Anyway, the first few things worked, and then a couple of things didn't work, and then something else didn't work, and then, you know, it kind of like got a bit. It certainly wasn't, you know, It certainly wasn't a party vibe, and it was a bit more of a therapy vibe within about an hour, and everyone was getting tired. And so, and after about an hour and a half, so listen, when the last two things stopped working, and I've only got two people to work with anyway, I thought, well, I can't really do a show with two people. We've got to the end of what I can do. There's no one here that wants to do it other than, so I said, listen, I'm going to have to leave it there. I'd been there for an hour and a half. I said I'd be there for 2 hours. Anyway, she started shouting at me and like in front of this gathering and saying, you know, that was shit, basically, and that was not good enough. And I said, listen, I don't know what else you can do, what else you want me to do. I'm stopping because we've got, it's kind of like, basically, like, I'll leave you to enjoy your party. I didn't want to make it, you know, like an unpleasant, kind of like, it's time for me to leave. These people are not enjoying it anymore. I should go. So she, apart from abusing me at the time, I got home. And then following that, she contacted me before we had any kind of arrangement, because I was thinking, what do I do? She'd already given me the money. And I was, at this point, I think I put some advice saying, what should I do? And I think everyone else said, give the money back. And at that point, I was going to. But the following day, she got in touch with my bank and reported me as a fraud. So stopped my, so I was unable, at that time I was working in the clinic. Yeah, I couldn't get to the clinic. And I can't remember why, but I couldn't get any money. That's right, to get petrol, to get or park my car. So I thought, no, I'm not giving you money back, you witch. And it was so unfair as well, because I thought I had been there, you know, I'd gone there for an hour and a half on a Saturday night. You know, it wasn't an extortionate amount of money. It was something like it was like 350 quid. So it wasn't like at the last minute. She'd already had two people that let her down. And what was apparent to me, she was actually mad. Yeah, it wasn't a brilliant night, but actually I did pretty okay under the circumstances. And no one was going to do a great night. Well, yeah, I don't think anyone was going to do a great night, really.
Maybe you need a better contract, darling.
What's that?
You need a better contract.
Yes, exactly. So obviously, yes, there's many failures on my part. No contract, no experience, no insisting, listen, I'm not coming to your house for, you know, with 10 people there and no music and no booze and no one having a good time. For £300, you know. But yeah, so basically no contract, but she's stalked me ever since, and it's been, and I do get get my heart sinks, because obviously she doesn't just say this person did a bad party.
Why would you let this woman bother you? It sounds like she's just an angry person anyway. People are going to know that about her as it is. I would just personally anyway, I can understand your lesson. That is a valuable lesson.
Yeah, it bothers me because she's telling lies about me on social media. So she'll say, I went out, I drank everything in that house, and I went out and I slammed the door and I broke the glass, literally just make it. And I know my part of me thinks she's mad. And I found out she's a Trump supporting, like a volunteer goes around. And for me, that was the nail in the coffin of how mad she actually, and I think she's a fundamentalist Christian, you know. So I know she's mad on some level, but it still hurts me. It still hurts me that she's telling lies about me, and you know, my sense of injustice is kind of like raged. And obviously, I want to shout and swear at her, and you know, and be equally unreasonable, but I can't, because that just makes me look really bad. So.
Yeah. Well, we all live and learn.
Thank you for sharing the experience. Yeah. And some valuable learnings that come from it. So Lara, thank you very much for coming on the show. You're welcome. Been great to talk to you. It's been great to see you in face rather. Oh, yeah.
So thanks for coming on the show, and we do appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast. Don't forget to leave us a review and follow us on Facebook.